you're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, you'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
Hello, friends. Lee Brown here. And today on Crazy Shit in Real Estate, you're going to get to hear from Josh Ferrari, who is a pretty young dude, but he's going to talk to us about what he experienced in wholesaling and how he moved into syndication and how he's gone from no money and an investment that didn't work out the way he wanted all the way to partnering with people to do really big projects. So if you've ever been intimidated by real estate investing, just sit back and enjoy, because you're about to have a laugh and maybe you're going to get a creepy crawly on the back of your neck as you learn. And I'll see you on the other side. Thanks for being here. Before you get the rest of the story, I'd love to share a quick message from today's sponsor.
Hey, y'all. Just going to take a quick break from this conversation to let you know about the sponsor of today's episode. That sponsor is, well, frankly, it's me. It's Lee Brown University. Look, it's no secret that real estate is crazy competitive, getting more so every day. And when the pie doesn't get any bigger, but the people wanting a piece of it do, you've got to figure out a competitive advantage. And that's why I created Lee Brown University. It's everything you need from soup to nuts, cradle to grave, point A to point B, whatever point B is. Each of you has different goals. So maybe you're a new to the career realtor, or you're a super experienced pro who can't figure out that next level. There's something in my course that's going to help you break through. It's designed for you before I even met you. So enroll in Lee Brown University today. You go to www.leebrownu.com and I'll see you there. Now, back to this amazing content. Hello, Joshua.
What is going on? Is it Lay or Lee?
Lee.
Lee, okay.
Are you Joshua or Josh?
Most folks call me Josh, but it doesn't matter to me.
Well, I don't care what you call me as long as you call me.
Basically, I'm excited to be on the show. I've never heard of a show where you just talk about crazy real estate stories. So this will be interesting.
Well, I mean, it's actually called Crazy Shit in Real Estate. So right. I did that so I could have the little black box with the E in it to be really edgy and cool, because real estate doesn't tend to be edgy and cool, but it's wildly fun.
I can imagine all the stories. And I bet most of them are probably like, they lost money stories, or like someone died stories.
Well, there is a dead guy in an open house. That was in season one. And we've had people having sex in houses. That's in several seasons. We've had houses full of shit, houses full of lint. We've had a porn shoot. There's so many different things that happen in real estate. The one from this past week was an agent who accidentally sold the wrong house.
Oh, my goodness. I feel like my story doesn't compare.
You're going to have to take it up a notch. So tell me who Josh Ferrari is, what you do.
So have we started the show? Or
we did start the show, because I never tell anybody. That's part of the fun of having a conversation.
Okay. Okay.
You're like the most fun podcast ever. Everybody listens to this while they're on the treadmill and working out or on their way to appointments. So they love just kind of walking into our conversation, just like you just walked in.
Oh my goodness. Literally. Yeah. So myself, I got started investing in real estate a little over 3 years ago, about January of 2018. And my dad actually called me up one random day and said, "Hey, your mom and I are about to spend $40,000 on some course. It's going to teach us how to flip houses." I was like,
$40,000. Dad watched an infomercial at night. No, Dad.
Yeah, I'm thinking HGTV, right? I'm thinking like, where is the money coming from? If you spend $40,000, that's like all you guys have, you know? How are you going to then buy a house and flip it and make money? Like, what is happening here? But it was very interesting. You know, I was intrigued, like, well, this might be neat. So being this 4 hour long conversation. And at the end of it, I was just like, okay, there's something in real estate. I don't think it's flipping, but there's something in here that is for me. And so I started reading books. I started educating myself, learning, and ended up getting into wholesaling and flipping contracts. Tried my hand at that for 6 months. didn't end up closing any deals. We got like 6 or 7 under contract on the sell side, but no one would ever buy anything. I was like, all right, whatever. We're wasting all this money on marketing. Obviously, this isn't the direction we need to head in.
Hang on. Let me pause you there for 1 second. Hey, listeners, if you don't know what wholesaling is, that's the people who we buy ugly houses. They go up to somebody's house and say, hey, let me sell this for you. They're not licensed realtors most of the time because it's hard for a realtor to do this without a conflict of interest or being in violation of license laws. And so you ask this mama if you can buy her house and she agrees to sell it for 40, but you know it's worth 90. So the wholesaler then finds another buyer on the other end, which is typically an investor who would pay the 90, and the wholesaler keeps the margin in the middle. So basically they're compensated for being the boots on the ground, finding somebody who definitely needs the house to go away. And we'll have a discussion later about what you think about it ethically and what the best needs are for the consumer. But there are people for whom this is the best option because of the house being in disrepair or they need cash really fast. So that's your quick breakout of what wholesaling is. So back to you, Josh. You didn't like wholesaling probably because it felt a little bit icky and it's hard to pull people together because at some point they do find out they maybe could get more for it in different avenues. So where did you go after wholesaling?
So I actually wanted to, I've never actually told the story before, but we're on a show about crazy stories in real estate. And so during my wholesaling adventures, I was driving out to properties, trying to figure out if they were going to make sense, trying to do my underwriting or analysis, basically take some photos and then set that up to send off to my investors who would eventually buy it. Well, I got this one house or a call from the owner of this one house, finally from my marketing. And he said he was out of state and he had this house somewhat off in the country. It was in Bay Minette, which I'm down here in Mobile. It's very just kind of rural and somewhat redneck.
So was it a trailer house?
No, it was not. It was an actual house built there, but there was a few houses on this one lane road for probably like a mile, like a house here. And then it would be a ways before there was another house and so on and so forth. And so I'm driving down, I'm like, all right, I'll go check it out. Driving down and I see this one house that I think is it, because I can't really see what the numbers on the house are. So I show up to the house and they're like, I tell them, hey, is this like a knock on the door? Is this such and such address? And they're like, oh no, you're looking for the sketchy house down the way. I was like, what?
Of course.
What? Like, yeah, like it's down that way. Good luck. And I'm like, oh. Gosh, should I even want to go? Like, should I just leave? Is it even worth it?
I mean, when the neighbors say good luck, that's not generally expecting good luck.
Right. So I go and get back in my truck, drive over there to the back of this house. It's in this weird, windy, dusty road that's not any kind of paved. I get there, there's stuff all out in the front yard. Trash is just really dirty, nasty, kind of smells. I'm like, this is perfect. You know, it's this ugly, nasty house. The investor can make look really nice. And maybe this is a deep value add. I don't know. And so this lady comes out. She's smoking cigarettes. She's like trailer trash, basically. You can tell. And she's like, hey, are you so-and-so? You know, our landlord or whoever told us that someone was coming. And I was like, whoever she said I was not. So I just said, yeah, it's me. I'm so-and-so going to check out the house. And so she starts walking me around on the outside. The outside's nasty, but it wasn't all that bad. And I get on the inside and the inside is like, she shows me this fire damage that they did in the kitchen. Like, hey, yeah, we were cooking tacos or something in the kitchen and the whole kitchen caught on fire and there's like black ash. Like,
oh, I love the honesty. I mean, she pointed it out. She wasn't trying to hide it. Good job, friend. Good job.
I was like, what the heck is this? There's spiders and cockroaches and all this stuff like living in it. She's got her like grandma living there. She was kind of on the older side too. She was maybe 40s or 50s, and then her grandma looked
hold
like
up. The older side is not 70s. 40s and 50s, Mr. You fix that right now. Mm-mm. Older side is 70s, so you can say
okay, medium. Okay. So the grandma was on the older side then. All right.
There
all
you
right.
go.
But then not only that, she also had a little girl there. Like she was like 6 or 7. I'm like, this is horrible living conditions for these folks. But anyway, I'm continuing to kind of walk through the property. And she's asking me if I want to see this room and this room. I'm like, yeah. And then there was this one really weird room that was like, the house was just built weird, first of all, and everything was kind of trashy. But it, you go down the stairs and the, you know, the stairs are at an angle like this, and the door is like right here. Like you have to somehow step way up to get in there. It almost looked like it was supposed to be a closet.
So there were missing risers to the stairs, or the stairs were at the different angle from the door?
Yeah, the stairs were like this and the door was on the wall.
So it's like a Salvador Dali kind of house.
Just weird. And
hey, audio listeners, you're going to have to go look up the video because I can't describe this and neither can Josh. So just go watch the video, and video people, you try and figure it out. I can't. I got nothing. Go ahead.
Right. And so I'm thinking it's just a closet. And she's asking if I want to see it. So I'm like, I'll just open it. I'll just look up from down here on the stairs. And she opens the door and it's like this weird little, it's like dollhouse walkway that you have to get. Like, it was really short, I'll say, like 3 feet, maybe 3 foot ceiling that you had to like crawl up through to get in. But you actually got in. Like, it was, you got up in there. So I climb up in there.
Why? Why did you go in there? Just turn around and leave. You're like in a Saw movie now. This is not a good idea.
And then it was like this long hallway almost. Like I went the full length of the stairs. I get all the way to the end and turn. And it's this big open room, like this big game room almost, you would say. And there was some creepy stuff going on up there. There was a pole, first of all. Right in the middle.
Because of course. I mean, right it's a fitness craze.
It's a fitness pole right in the middle. And then there's these like weird sex toys laying all around and like a swing off in the corner and this disco ball hanging from the ceiling. There's no lights, you know, in this weird like black light disco ball setting. And of course she follows me in, you know, I'm thinking I'm going in just to check it out, take some photos and leave. She follows me in and she starts asking me if I want to like try the swing out. Like, hey, you want to try out some of this stuff? I was like, no, nope, I'm good.
Yep.
And so I basically snapped a couple of quick photos and bolted out. I was like, all right, I gotta go. Like, I got another meeting. I'm late. I gotta go. I gotta get out of here. So that was my crazy wholesaling story.
I mean, I'm getting a very Silence of the Lambs Saw vibe from that story. So did you ever follow up and see what happened with the house? Did it finally sell?
I did not follow up. Well, I did follow up with the landlord, I guess. I said, hey, I'm not interested. Like, forget about it.
Need to burn some sage up in there. It's not going to work.
It's just the people were weird. The whole house was weird. No bueno. So anyway, then to go back to the story of where kind of moving forward to where I am today, we got out of wholesaling and decided to buy something because we really wanted the benefits of owning real estate.
Man, old school.
So we bought a fourplex, or we were looking at a fourplex to buy. And we're like,
I love quads.
What are we going to do? Like, how are we going to buy this basically? And we're going to house hack it. That was the plan. But I didn't have any money for the down payment. You know, what the heck? How on earth are we going to make this happen? So I just remember reading books and listening to what other people had done and hearing over and over and over again that you had to use other people's money if you ever really wanted to kind of get anywhere in this business. So I was like, well, let me call my dad up. He's trying to get into flipping and real estate and the whole shebang. So I call him up, give him my quick elevator pitch. And he's like, yeah, let's do it. I'll pay for the down payment, a quick little like handshake exchange for some equity.
Oh, the bank of dad. Oh,
yeah, I know. So we get into the deal and I'm thinking everything is going to be just amazing.
HGTV, it's easy, right? I mean, just like spend $1,000 and make $50 million. It's so easy.
And none of the four units were livable either. They were all uninhabitable. And we were going to move in to one of the uninhabitable units while we're renovating the rest. And because we were like, well, we're spending all this money on holding costs and renovations anyway, like all our money's being dumped into this. We can't even afford really to go rent somewhere else while this place is being renovated. So we moved into the unit that was the most livable, but we moved into it in August of 2018 down in Southern Alabama. No AC. The shower didn't work. Only the bath worked because the valve was busted. The kitchen didn't really function that well. All we had was like some box fans. There was cockroaches everywhere. Similar to the house I was talking about when I was wholesaling. It was just in bad shape. And I kept telling my wife, it's going to be okay. Things are going to turn out for the better. I promise it's going to be worth it.
trust me, honey, I got this.
Right. And the deal ended up going so beyond sideways. Anything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And of course it was our first deal too. You know, I'm trying to tell her how amazing real estate is and how it's going to provide all these things. And the deal just went completely haywire. We actually had four different contractors walk through the property with us when we were looking at initially buying it. And they all kind of gave us the same spiel, the same price range roughly of $75,000 to $80,000 in renovations. And I was like, great, you know, they're all kind of saying the same thing. Makes me think they all know what they're talking about. But none of them would commit to doing the work. So that should have been a red flag right there. But their excuse was that we were using a 203K FHA loan where you lump the renovation portion into the actual loan. And so they said, well, we can't get paid that way. We've got to get paid up front. And so my naive self is thinking, you know, well, I just can't do that. So I'll just find someone else to do it. But really, they knew what they were getting themselves into, and they just were running the complete opposite direction. So that should have been red flag number one, but it wasn't. We still closed. We ended up finding a contractor. And of course, they doubled the budget and tripled the timeline on the first unit. And I'm like, we just can't keep you guys for the rest of the units. You know, this is not going to work. So then we had to fire them and hire a new one, which we already had the next contractor lined up before we fired them because I didn't want there to be any overlapping in time. But the 203K loan is a paperwork nightmare, and it took 5 months between firing the first contractor and hiring the second one that nothing happened to the house. So during that time frame, I was like, there's just no way I'm going to sit back and not let anything happen. There's no way on God's green earth, and we're just going to keep paying these holding costs while nothing happens. So all of the money was lumped into the loans. We didn't have any money. Like, what are we going to do? We started getting credit card debt out. We started getting personal loans to pay for tools and materials. And I thought, hey, if I can fix an airplane, I can fix a house. I'll go to YouTube,
right? YouTube.
I'll go to YouTube University. I'll figure it out. We're going to make this thing happen. So I became our carpenter, our electrician, our plumber, our sheetrocker, painter, all of those things. And then I start getting deeper into the work on one of the ground level units. The first contractor finished the upper unit where we ended up moving to. And then when our GC, our new GC finally comes in, he says, hey, did you know there's foundation issues with this house?
Because of course.
I was like, what are you talking about? You know, the last contractor said everything was good. All the four contractors I had walk it and look at the foundation said it was good. What do you mean there's problems? He's like, well, there's a sag here, and there's all this other nonsensical stuff happening. And it was on a crawl space. So it was like piers. And so of course, this is the first time now that I actually go underneath the house to look, because I didn't know any better. I didn't know what I was supposed to be looking for. I go under there, and there's this massive pillar, like bigger than all the other pillars, because it used to be like a fireplace. And all of the mortar had just completely eroded, and like it had just capsized, and the brick was starting to just give way. And so the house was leaning like this. It was
following the fireplace.
And I was like, I mean, it makes sense because we saw that it was tilted and we saw that there was some sags in the floor, but all the contractors were like, well, this is just settling. It's a 100-year-old house. I was like, all right, you know, 100 years old. I figure there'd be some settling. What do I know? I don't know anything. But of course, there's foundation issues. Now we got to pay thousands of dollars to fix the foundation. And then that ended up, you know, they jacked the house back up, and that ended up causing more issues, which made us go more over budget. We ended up going like $40,000, $50,000 over budget. It ended up taking a year and a half to finish the renovations when it was only supposed to take 6 months. And it was just an absolute nightmare. And then we were living there, so we were property managing, which was another nightmare because it was constant plumbing issues. It was constant like leaks and, hey, my electrical outlet doesn't work, or hey, the floors are like moving, you know, because they laid down like the LVP flooring, click lock kind of floating floor. Like, my floor is moving. It's like, what? Floor is moving? Like, yeah, it like came.
It's just a ghost. I mean, you should have just said it was haunted, and that might have added value to the renters.
Came unclicked, I guess. I don't know. And so it was just like every day it was something new, and we just couldn't keep up. So we finally actually ended up selling that property January of this year, made no money, but we didn't lose money either. So from a financial perspective, it wasn't the greatest investment. It was more so lessons learned, what not to do, kind of where we wanted to head in the future. So we ended up throughout that process learning more about multifamily and deciding that was really the direction we wanted to go. So we ended up buying or deciding that we wanted to get into syndication. I was like, well, these larger multis look like kind of the direction I want to go into. I'd read a couple of books. One was Joe Fairless, that big red book. And that was kind of giving me some clarity for like, this is amazing. You know, this sounds like exactly like the direction I want to head in. Exactly like kind of what we want our lifestyle to look like. You know, this can provide the lifestyle that we wanted. And so we decided multifamily syndication was the way we wanted to go. We ended up getting a mentor along the way from a local real estate meetup. He was actually the guest speaker. And I was like, this is amazing. And so then afterwards, I talked to him, found out we both had aviation in common. He's a naval helicopter pilot. I'm an aircraft technician. So that's kind of how we clicked. From there, he let me take him out to lunch that next week. And he's kind of been somewhat of a mentor ever since. So I think that really kind of helped me and propel me to where I am today. Then just fast forward to today, and I have two business partners. We all kind of live down here in Southern Southeast, I guess. We've got one that lives in Destin, one that lives in Gulf Shores, and I'm in Mobile, Southern Alabama. We've since closed a 21-unit single-family portfolio, a 42-unit apartment complex, a 34-unit apartment complex. Recently closed on a single-family luxury flip, which is kind of not really something we're going after, but it was very interesting. It's like a this really nice, fancy 6,000 plus square foot beach house in Gulf Shores. And so we were like, well, that's cool. You know, it'll make us a quick $1 million. We felt like we couldn't pass up on an opportunity like that. So then we've also got another 148 units under contract, another 88 units under contract. And we're really trying to hit 1,000 units this year in 2021.
All right. So tell our listeners and our viewers what exactly syndication is and how you were able to transition into it, because it feels really big as a process.
It is. It is somewhat big, but it's also somewhat easy at the same time because it's those small baby steps that you take. And I think the biggest myth just in real estate as a whole is when folks say you need to take massive action to be successful. Like get out there, just take massive action, do the big things, you'll be successful. And maybe that's true for some people. I don't know. Maybe some people have that rare success. But I mean, how many people, you know, just go out and buy 1,000 units by themselves their first day in real estate? Like it just doesn't happen. You go out, you make that one phone call, you talk to that one person, you read that one book or that one paragraph, listen to that one podcast like this, and you just start step by step getting to eventually having the knowledge that you need, having the connections that you need, and being able to do the deals that you want to do or do whatever it is that you want to do inside of real estate. And so it was those small steps. I think it first started with deciding what I needed to do and educating myself on what the heck syndication even was, which that's what your question. Syndication is the pooling together of capital or of people in order to buy a larger asset that you wouldn't otherwise have been able to buy. And for the syndication that we do, it also entails passive investors and active investors. So there's folks that maybe don't know a whole lot about real estate or just don't have the time. They're really busy working professionals or whatever their situation is. They just don't care to be active in the game, but they want to own real estate. So they're able to invest in a syndication, which for us is typically in multifamily. It's typically larger apartments or mobile home parks. And then they get a piece of the ownership. They get a piece of the pie and they don't have to really do anything for it other than kind of vet the deal to see if it makes sense for them and their personal goals. And then vet us as operators and sponsors to see if they can trust us and if we really know what the heck we're even doing and if we're going to be able to really capitalize on the business plan that we're setting forth. So it's the pooling of folks together. You know, say you got $1 million deal. Most of the time, most people can't just close $1 million deal by themselves. So you would raise the money for the down payment. You would raise it for potential CapEx things, which is additional renovations that you want to do to the property once you move in to make it better. Raise the money for some of those closing costs. And then they all get a piece of it. You get a piece of equity for doing all the work. And you are known as the GP or the general partner, the active investor. And then all the folks that are giving you money to buy this deal, they're the LP, the limited partner, or the passive investor.
Okay, so for all of the listeners and viewers that are now thinking, okay, I could do something with other people, but you mentioned you have to syndicate with people that you trust. What are the questions to ask before you get involved and throw money into a deal?
Oh, I actually just did a webinar on this like 2 weeks ago. There are...
Also, is it recorded? Should we put a link in the show notes so they can go listen to it?
Yeah, we can do that. We could put a link.
Well, let me do that and make life easy. So that's where it's going to be, friends. Go to the show notes to watch the whole webinar. But give us like the first question you'd ask, the most important question.
I think the most important question is, for me, it's just getting to know the person on like a personal level. Aside from business, I want to know who you are, what you're about, what you believe in, what you do, how long have you been doing this? Do you have a family? Like, I want to know, are you looking to be in this for the long haul? Are you looking to do this and get like 100 units really quick and then be like, all right, I got what I need, I'm done. And then it's like, what the heck are we doing here investing with you? You're just trying to quit as soon as you get into it. I want to see someone that probably has had somewhat of a track record or is attached to someone else that has a track record that has done something like this before. I want to see if they know what they're talking about. I want to start talking to them about, hey, tell me about this deal. And if I'm asking questions about cap rate and internal rate of return, and they have no idea what I'm saying, then this is probably not the person I want to invest in. So it takes me also being educated before trying to meet this individual. But I think the biggest thing is the trust factor. They always say it's know, like, and trust. And the know and the like typically comes fairly quickly when you start building some of that quick rapport. But I think the trust is, it's always getting to know them on a personal level, you know, knowing what you do in business, that's fine and dandy. That's kind of the byproduct of the relationship that we have, the success that we're able to build, the value we're able to add to each other. But I really want to know what are your hobbies? What do you like to do? You have a wife, you have a husband, you got kids. What's that like? You live in the North or in Washington? What's it like up there? I've never been to Washington. Tell me about that. And if folks are quick to not want to talk about that, or they just, like, I ask the question and they're like, yeah, I've lived here for 5 years. And then it's silence and that's it. I'm like, well, I don't want to keep prying questions out from you. I want to know that you want to be in this conversation. I want to know that I'm going to be important when it comes down to it. What's the communication going to be like? Are you going to actually want to talk to me when I have a question? I know I'm probably not going to be your biggest investor. I'm probably not going to be the one that writes the biggest check, but are you going to treat me like I am? Are you still going to communicate with me when things are going sideways, when there's a hurricane that hits, if you're investing somewhere in the Southeast, am I not going to hear from you for 2 months while you're trying to scramble and figure something out? Or are you going to tell me, hey, the hurricane hit, here's what happened, here's the update. All of those different things are some things that I personally would want to know. And I know that was way more than one question, but to go, you could definitely go to the webinar to see all of those questions, but those are some of the, I guess, beginning things I would really want to know about a potential.
I mean, it's kind of like dating, right? So you're trying to figure out if you can build a long-term relationship, because when you're talking money, making it back is really hard. To making it the first time is hard, but making it back is even harder. So right. I love those insights there about bringing people in. So the last thing I'll ask you before we finish our episode here is, are you serving as a mentor now to pay back what you received from your mentor?
Kind of. So I'm serving as a mentor from a strictly organic perspective, which is kind of what he did for me. You know, no one's paying me to do anything. But I feel like having started the podcast that I have, getting on other folks' podcasts, being very active in social media, I get folks ask me questions all the time, schedule phone calls because they want to know more about what I do. And then also how I did it, because they want to get into it. So you could say that I'm mentoring folks from that perspective when they're just really curious and they really want to get into the space. And I had a phone call literally yesterday with a guy. We're literally the exact same age. He just had a baby girl. I'm about to have a baby girl. We're both believers of the faith. Like, we just all had very similar lifestyles, but he was, you know, 3 years behind me. He was just now getting into it, wanted to know how I did it. And so I thought that was really cool that I could connect with him and tell him, like, hey, you know, we are the same age. We came from like the same background. It is possible. Here's what I did. He had a ton of questions. And so helping folks like that really means a lot. And what's really crazy to me is when older people are contacting me like, hey, I want to know how you did it. And I'm like, you can do it too. You know, you've got way more access to capital or just life experience or connections over the life that you've lived. There's some folks that have been in real estate for a long time, but maybe they've been in the single family space and they want to roll over into the multifamily. So they've got a ton of real estate connections, but they're like, yeah, I just want to know more about multifamily. I always find that kind of a very interesting conversation. And so you could say I'm mentoring folks. I like to answer questions and talk to people and just help out.
And it's where social media can be a real big opportunity if you look at it that way. Not everything about social media is fighting with people on Facebook. There's also really great networks you can dial into. So if anybody wants to connect with you, what's the best way for them to find you and tap into your knowledge and network?
I think the best way is to go to ferraricapital.com. We've got all of the links to our social media accounts and our monthly newsletters in there. The podcast is in there. The free ebook is in there. All of our information is right there.
So because y'all didn't write that down or you can't spell Ferrari, that's fine. Everything's in the show notes for this episode. So you can go click and follow and add to your knowledge portfolio as well. So you can shortcut the learning curve and build up a future that will be more financially sound than what you have today. Josh, thank you for coming on the podcast and giving us a Silence of the Lambs kind of a story, but also some insights on different angles of real estate, which is always a fun part of the business.
Yeah, for all the listeners out there, don't feel bad if you don't know how to spell Ferrari. There are a lot of people out there that don't. You'd be surprised how many variations of the word I get.
It's okay. I mean, at least Ford. I mean, Ford versus Ferrari is probably the main way people could spell it nowadays. And that's actually a really good movie on a totally different note. But anyway, thank you for coming on the show. And I'm excited for what you've shared. And I look forward to further connection in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
All right, guys, if you enjoyed this episode, if you learned something, click the subscribe button, give us 5 stars, and we'll see you next time.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one-up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally won't just subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.